have on the line with us, Dr. Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Brzezinski has both a medical degree, a Ph.D. He has a clinic in Texas where he has been working for many years under FDA, Federal Drug Administration, permission to do experimental work with treatment for cancer. And, of course, he's been targeted recently by our government. Our government, which is there to protect us, and as the prosecutor said in an article I read, even good people do bad things, referring to Dr. Brzezinski and the fact that he had committed a terrible crime. Some of his medication had gone across state boundaries. And Dr. Brzezinski, would you like to sort of comment a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and really how the government has targeted you for destruction because, in my estimation, you have a cancer treatment that really works?
Well, I would say that even good government is doing bad things, and that's a good example that they are doing bad things in our case and in case of our patients. Well, it happened that I am a discoverer of chemicals which exist in our body, which work as molecular micro switches. They can turn off the signals which are forcing malignant cells to multiply. You turn off the electricity in cancer cell, and the cancer cell will stop multiplying and it will die. We don't need to destroy them because they will die on their own. So this is a treatment which everybody was looking for many years. Of course, it's not perfect yet. It works for some cancers. It doesn't work for the others. But obviously, we are learning how to treat many different cancers. And on the way, we are helping to save lives of people who don't have any chance to have good results with any other treatment.
Now, you found that this is very successful with certain types of brain cancer. Which types of brain cancer and which other cancers is this treatment beneficial for?
We decided to use this treatment first in the type of cancer which is always fatal, okay, which everybody dies from. And I think highly malignant brain tumors fit this definition. We know very well that regardless if we are dealing with the chairman of the board of a great oil company or advisor to the president, they are dying from malignant brain tumors. That's why I decided to treat such tough cancer in the first place. Currently, we are conducting 23 different clinical trials only in the treatment of malignant brain tumors. So in each of these trials, we are supposed to have 40 patients who are diagnosed with different type of malignant brain tumor. Of course, it's not the end of it because we have altogether 72 clinical trials approved by FDA in which we are treating different types of cancer. But approximately a third of the clinical trials which we are using is for the treatment of different types of malignant brain tumors. And we have good results in such stuff. Malignant tumors to treat, like, for instance, anaplastic astrocytoma, mixed glioma, oligodendroglioma, medulloblastoma, rhabdoid tumor of the brain, just to mention some of them. I don't want to tire you with giving you the names of medical, technical cancers, but in most of these tumors where nothing can be done, we are able to save human lives. Unfortunately, these patients are usually coming to us after they've tried everything. They're very advanced, and we cannot help everybody, but still, we are able to save a number of them. And these malignant brain tumors, you already finished one of the clinical trials which has been approved by FDA, and only 20% of patients in this particular clinical trial did not have any good response. The rest have some type of responses. In many of them, the tumor completely disappeared or decreased during the treatment. We have patients who are free from highly malignant tumors for many years, over 5 years, and doing well. So this is something which could greatly benefit people if it's allowed to be developed. And here we found obstacle. And the obstacle is the agency which normally should do everything possible to help us.
Well, now, why have they targeted you? I mean, this ostensibly because some of the medication went across interstate boundaries, borders, but you get patients from all over America, and it seems that they're doing everything they can and putting every obstacle in the way to keep you from being able to save human lives.
That's what they did over the last 14 years, wasting millions and millions of taxpayers' money. So that's insanity, which is fueled by some of FDA lawyers. And the chief architect of this whole thing, the chief villain, is Mr. Robert Spiller, who's occupying the position of associate counsel at FDA. He's sitting somewhere in the FDA office, and he's wasting millions of dollars of taxpayers' money running vendetta against us, simply because I refuse to die, simply because in 1983, when I was attacked first time by FDA, I decided to defend myself, and I defended myself, I stayed alive, and I was able to really do everything what the FDA wanted from us. I was able to be approved by FDA as principal investigator, and I am doing everything according to the law. So what FDA did after that? FDA was unhappy with the judge's decision who allow us to continue to treat our patients. And then they embarked on grand jury investigations. Altogether, I recall 6 grand jury investigations to put me out of business, practically to put me to jail. Normally, it is sufficient to have 1 grand jury investigation to indict somebody. In my case, it took them about 6 grand jury investigations. And what they were trying to prove? They were trying to prove that I was shipping our medicine to the patients who were outside the state of Texas. They couldn't prove it because that's according to FDA against the law, and that's what I decided that we are not going to do. The patients were coming to us from all over the country. And after a while, after for instance 2 weeks, after a month, when they were getting better, they were returning home and they were taking medicine with them. So that's what FDA felt was criminal act, that the patients were taking medicine with them to the home state. And they were not accusing patients. They were accusing me of criminal act of allowing patients to leave Texas. Can you think about more insane idea? How can I keep American people here in the state of Texas forever, okay? It's impossible. And FDA knows that it's impossible. And yet, they were able to somehow convince the people in the grand jury that I committed criminal act because the patients were taking medicine out of state. Everybody knows that law allows the patients to go to Mexico. They can buy whatever medicine they want to treat cancer. They can bring this back to their home state, and that's fine. But when they came to us to take medicine, which already was approved for clinical trial, FDA claimed that this was criminal act. So there's something basically wrong.
Well, of course, did you ever stop and think that maybe they don't want you saving human lives?
They don't, apparently, because they couldn't care less about saving human lives. When I was indicted about a year and a half, the first attempt from lawyers representing FDA was to stop treatment for our patients. They did not hesitate to stop treatment knowing that the treatment is saving lives of these patients. They wanted about 300 people to die simply to boost FDA ego, okay? So that's in my opinion, criminal act. And this should be exposed. And never in American history should any agency be allowed to play with human life like that.
I certainly agree with you. Now, we have on the line Mr. Dean Mosier, and I'm going to ask if my call screener would mind running outside and telling that fellow with the blower to stop blowing, because I'm afraid it's going to come through on the radio program. Mr. Mosier, are you there?
I am indeed.
Where do you fit into this?
Well, I'm the clinical trials director, basically the regulatory affairs person who's overseeing all of the clinical trials that we're conducting with full FDA approval. And, that's really one of the great ironies of this whole thing is that, and the jury wasn't allowed to hear this during the trial that took place in January and February, and they were flabbergasted when it was over and they found out, but...
In other words, what they did was the court system was set up so you couldn't really defend yourself effectively.
No, we couldn't. It was very selective, and the fact is that the whole trial was a moot point because by the time we got to trial, already for a year, all of the patients that we see had been in FDA clinical trials or on FDA-approved compassionate exceptions, and we were treating them, and including out-of-state patients, and even shipping the medicine out-of-state with full FDA knowledge and approval. And no patients were being treated without FDA approval. So you know, the whole point of the trial was really moot. So Dr. Brzezinski was being tried for doing something several years ago that he was doing legally every day during the trial.
And so basically they had targeted him. What do you think that their real objective was?
Well, I think different parts have different objectives. I think that, Dr. Brzezinski mentioned Robert Spiller, and I think it's important to realize that, I guess everybody knows that has had experience with an obsessive bureaucrat who just loses track of what country he's in and who he's supposed to be serving and what his job is. And I know of no more startling example than Robert Spiller. What happened is this. In 1983, Robert Spiller, who was the associate chief counsel of the FDA, went to court to try to shut down Dr. Brzezinski, and he failed. The judge ruled that Dr. Brzezinski cannot ship the medicine out of state, but the FDA, as a federal agency, has no jurisdiction over what he does within the state of Texas. Well, Robert Spiller was furious and actually wrote almost a threatening memo to the judge, or motion, and said that if she does not grant the relief sought, the FDA will have to resort to other, quote, less efficient methods, such as searches and seizures and criminal prosecutions. And that's what they've done. There was a very interesting article, an interview with Peter Barton Hutt, who was a former chief counsel of the FDA, virtually ran the agency in the late 70s. And he was quoted as saying, if you beat the FDA in court, you have an angry FDA that is willing to slit your throat.
But supposedly, our government is there to serve us, not to control us, not to threaten us, not to do everything they can to go around the law so that their will becomes the law of the land.
Well, that's the theory, but, unfortunately... Sometimes power corrupts, and it certainly did in this case.
Well, this is the sort of thing you might expect in communist Russia or Nazi Germany, but certainly not in America.
Or communist Poland, from whence Dr. Brzezinski came, which
right.
is another irony.
All right, fine. Dr. Stan, and on the line with us is Dr. Brzezinski, who is MD, PhD. He came from Poland. He's made some of the most startling discoveries as far as cancer is concerned, and, of course, the government is doing everything they can to prevent him from saving human lives. Along with him is Dean Mosier, who's in charge of their clinical investigative studies. And, of course, what happened at the last trial? I understood that it was a locked jury, that basically they had a mistrial on that. What happened?
Well, what happened is the judge actually threw out all of the most serious charges, which were the fraud charges, and the jury deadlocked on the rest of the charges. We had a hung jury split down the middle 6-6.
And, of course, that means then that they can come back again if they want to.
They rarely do. Occasionally in a murder case in which they think they have compelling evidence, they'll come back. But in this case, apparently, they are going to retry.
And is this the federal government that's doing this, of course?
Yes, it is.
And, of course, then they were very clever so that the jury really didn't know what the issues were as far as what was really going on?
Well, right. They didn't let the jury know, for one thing, as I mentioned, that we are treating all patients now with full FDA knowledge and approval. And the other thing, and probably the most important thing that the government managed to have suppressed, is the efficacy of the drug. You would expect, normally in a trial of this sort, if the government thought it had any evidence that the drug didn't work, they would, of course, want to bring that in. But, of course, all the evidence points to the fact that the drug is effective, and so the government, the FDA, fought like a caged animal to keep that evidence out of court and succeeded. So we were unable to put on any witnesses or any patients. We put on patients, but they were unable to speak about the efficacy of the drug.
And, of course, the question is, why is the government trying to destroy a drug that will save people's lives from cancer? And, of course, I have my own views on that. Basically, are there any other cancers besides brain cancers that you're treating?
Dr. Brzezinski?
We have very exciting results in the treatment of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, especially the type of lymphoma which seldom responds well to chemotherapy. I'm talking about low-grade lymphoma. We already had patients who were completely cured from this type of lymphoma, including patients who previously failed on bone marrow transplantation. We have a number of different clinical trials in this category. If I remember well, we must have at least about 5 to 7 clinical trials in the area of lymphoma. Then the other exciting possibility is the treatment of cancer of the gastrointestinal system. For instance, liver cancer, cancer of the pancreas, colon cancer, cancer of the esophagus. In this area, we already have some successes, but we need to spend more time and accrue more patients to clinical trials to find out statistically how it works.
Well, now, cancer of the pancreas, you know, even in medical school, I learned that cancer of the pancreas was essentially a death warrant. I mean, there was nothing you could do. We could do the Whipple operation, which was simply delayed the obvious or the inevitable. Have you been able actually to ameliorate in any way the cancer of the pancreas?
Yes, we are able to accomplish this, but of course, we still have to perfect our treatment for this type of cancer. It's more difficult for us to treat pancreatic cancer than malignant brain tumors, but we have patients who are long-term survivors who are now over 5 years free from pancreatic cancer since we treated them. Of course, only some patients. A number of patients did not respond, and as I mentioned, we still need to perfect this treatment. But obviously, this is just the beginning of the area which is very exciting. And once we have government off our back and we have cooperation with researchers all over the world, then I believe we can conquer many cancers. This is just the beginning, and obviously we need a lot of support, but not harassment of the type which we experienced in the last 14 years.
Well, now, basically, you have presented this to medical meetings all over America. How many peer review papers have you published? Your material, your dossier's curriculum vitae, really very, very impressive. How many papers have you published on this?
We have over 100 papers, and what is even more important now, the number of papers published by researchers who are not associated with us, the researchers from the National Cancer Institute, various medical colleges, and the researchers from foreign medical schools, including Japanese, Israeli, European medical schools. These numbers are even higher now than the number of papers which we publish. So it looks like we are approaching to about 200 publications done by researchers who are completely independent from us, which is even more important. And this is going much faster now than ever before.
And are they getting the same good results that you are?
They do. Of course, many of them are involved in basic research to find out how various antineoplastins, this is the name of our medicines, work. Some of them are involved in clinical trials, such as researchers in Japan. And altogether, we can see great future for this type of treatment.
Now, tell us a little bit about what an antineoplastin is. What sort of a chemical or enzyme or a product is it?
This is a group of chemicals, and they have in this group, there are various types of molecules. We have peptides, which are small proteins. We have amino acid derivatives, which is a type of chemicals even smaller in molecular size than peptides. And then we have certain organic acids. So these are three groups of chemicals which are comprising antineoplastins. We believe that the number of antineoplastins will be growing. Right now we are talking about 10 different antineoplastins, but we know that there are more than that. So when the time goes by, I think we probably end up with as large a group of antineoplastins as we are dealing with antibiotics. And they work as different microswitches. Those which we isolated so far, which we identify chemical structure, they are able to regulate very important oncogenes. This is a RAS oncogene family. This family of oncogenes is responsible for approximately 40% of all cancers. And what these antineoplastins can do, they can turn off electrical signal which is generated by these oncogenes. And this electrical signal is necessary to force malignant cells to multiply, all the time and produce millions and millions of cancer cells. When we turn off electrical signal, multiplication will stop. But this is not the end of it. There are some angioplastins which regulate tumor suppressor genes. Tumor suppressor genes is a different family of genes which should eliminate abnormal cells, which should force malignant cells to die through what is called programmed cell death. This is a suicide program which exists in every cell and which is blocked in cancer cells. If we activate tumor suppressor genes, then they will, in addition to that, activate a suicide program in cancer cells, and then the cancer cells will die. But they will die in peace without causing any turbulence in the body. And again, in this area, we are regulating perhaps the most important tumor suppressor gene, which is called P53 gene. This gene is responsible for approximately 50% of all cancer. So altogether, we can handle numerous types of cancer, but in each category, we have always certain percentage of patients who will respond to the treatment and some patients who don't respond, because if we take under consideration even malignant brain tumors, then only about 70% of these patients have abnormality of P53 gene. The rest of them have different genes involved, and we have to find some other angioplastins which will be helpful to them.
And of course, you know, as a surgeon, I know a little bit about the fatality, this horrible brain cancer, which, you know, once it becomes inoperable, the outlook is pretty grim. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Dr. Brzezinski, and Dean Mosier, who is the Director of Clinical Research for Dr. Brzezinski and his clinic. Whereabouts actually is your clinic there in Texas?
Our clinic is in Houston, and in addition to clinic, we also have manufacturing facility, which was inspected many times and approved by the FDA. And we have also a research institute. A research institute and manufacturing facility is in Stafford, Texas, which is near Houston.
Patients have you treated over the last 20 years with your anti-neoplastins?
We are talking about treatment of about 3,000 patients, but we have to understand that these patients were treated by different protocols. Initially, we were involved for about 10 years in phase 1 clinical trials. In phase 1 trials, we tested about 20 different ways to treat cancer. And in such trials, we were not really oriented toward how effective is treatment, but we are trying to find out if we can use high dosages of the medicine and to see if we have any bad toxicity associated with the treatment. We found that the treatment is practically non-toxic. Most of the patients don't have any adverse reactions. But again, as far as results of the treatment are concerned, this was the next step. These were phase 2 trials, which we began in 1988 and which we are conducting now. Some of these trials were finished already. Many of them are in the process. Altogether, we are talking about close to 80 different clinical trials. And we hope that within a couple of years, all of these trials will be finished and will give us wealth of information regarding statistical results in various different types of cancer.
All right, fine. I'm going to open the lines here in case anybody out there would like to call in. Our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Now, nobody has ever accused you of not being an ethical doctor or really that anything you were doing was not totally dedicated to trying to help mankind. And yet we find that you have been targeted by the government and they're doing everything they can to disrupt your ability to continue treating people. Have they actually tried to stop you from treating people?
Oh, yes, they attempted many times, but they couldn't do it because we have such a great support from American people. We enjoy tremendous support from our patients, from news media. It was impossible. Whenever they tried, there was such an outcry of public opinion that they wouldn't dare to do it. And what good this would do? This would cause death of hundreds of people, among them children who have malignant brain tumors. So obviously, various governments committed crimes in the past, such as Nazi governments, but I don't believe the government in these days would like to deprive dying patients from the treatment.
Well, now, you actually came from Poland to America. Were you you gotten your MD, a PhD there, or did you get your degrees here?
No, I got both of my degrees in Poland, but of course I naturalized my degrees. But you see, even in the communist country, if you are talking about helping dying cancer patients, everybody would help. Even oppressive communist government would find a way to provide medicine for people who are dying from cancer. So whatever happens here is unheard of. The only other example of depriving patients, cancer patients from treatment was Nazi Germany, where if somebody was politically incorrect, he was deprived from the treatment. For instance, the patients who had cancer were not allowed to have surgery, which would help some of them. And such things should not be practiced. This should be exposed. And the people who are perpetuating this type of behavior in governmental agencies should be punished. They should never be allowed to run public agency, which should help American people, but not really hurt them.
Well, now, I'm sure you are being heard on talk radio programs all across America. I was just got off the phone before I came on our own program in Kansas City, and apparently you were there within the last couple of weeks with Rich Boyden on his program getting this information out. So I know your message is getting out. What sort of response are you getting from the American public? Are they incredulous that this could be going on here in America?
Well, everybody is surprised because people believe that governmental agency was designed to help them. After all, they're paying taxes, and FDA just makes a living from our taxes. So they should help us. They should be our servants. But they behave like kings, okay? They behave like not only just kings, but mad kings, the insane kings. And this should not happen. Why do we need to have a yoke like that on our back, okay? Why the agency which should help us should hurt us? They should change. They should be reformed from the bottom to the top, because such agencies should not really exist these days. They should really behave the way to protect American people, but protect the way that should not deprive patients who are dying from cancer from the treatment.
But this must be terribly expensive to have to defend yourself against these people in government who are trying to prevent you from saving human lives. You know, you must have invested a small fortune in your defense.
Definitely. I am working long hours. Obviously, we have numerous patients, and I am making my living from patients. So my typical day is 18 hours working day, usually also in weekends. So I'm able to make sufficient amount of money to somehow support ourselves. Of course, we have to spend a lot of money for the defense. But what government is spending is appalling. I think they must spend at least $12 million trying to get rid of us. So obviously, we didn't spend this amount of money. But they are spending taxpayers' money without any control, and this is something which should be investigated.
Well, have you tried to get in touch with any members of Congress or the Senate to demand an investigation of the Federal Drug Administration? Is anybody demanding that the government investigate it sounds to me like a department that's just gone off on its own.
Well, actually, Stan, there were congressional hearings on this case, because, you know, as Dr. Brzezinski said, four grand juries without an indictment is unprecedented. And the Congressional Investigation Subcommittee even hauled Dr. Kessler before them, and he hemmed and hawed and stammered for three uncomfortable hours. And I think, you know, prior to this, there had never been an indictment because they were trying to find evidence that we shipped the drug across state lines, which we were always very careful not to do. Because of these congressional investigations, it became, I guess, politically necessary to get an indictment. And so that's when the FDA changed its legal theory. And now all of a sudden they said, well, he doesn't really have to ship the drug out of state. If he so much as treats out-of-state patients, we're going to call that interstate commerce. Once there was and that's how they got the indictment, this fourth try or fifth try. Once they got the indictment, Congress shied away. And I think that there are going to be more investigations, but the congressmen are waiting for the criminal case to be settled finally. And I think that's one of the reasons why the FDA is trying to keep it alive and retry this case.
In other words, even though they were able to keep most of the evidence out, the fact that you were had an effective treatment, the fact that you were abiding by FDA regulations and doing at the present time exactly what FDA wanted, the fact that they were able to keep that out and still only were able to get six jurors convinced of this whole incredible story, and they're going to come back again. And of course, what they can do is they did with certainly people that they've targeted for destruction, Stacey Kuhn, they keep trying them over and over and over again until they can finally get a conviction.
That's right. It's really It's really trying to get around double jeopardy, and of course they have infinite amounts of money. You mentioned that this is costing us a lot. Of course it is. You know, the government doesn't care. It's not coming out of their pocket. Fortunately, the patient organization put together a legal defense fund, and fortunately that's been able to help out a little bit.
Well, now, how about bringing a personal lawsuit against the people in government? Are they in any way responsible if they do wicked and evil things?
Well, there are a number of people who can be a target of the lawsuits, but at this moment I don't have time for that. We can think about it in the future, but you see, I am more in constructive type thinking. I would like to really bring our medicine as soon as possible to the final approval, so that means that it will be available to all people throughout the United States. And it's just a matter of time when our medicine should be approved in different foreign countries, for instance in Japan. So FDA is fighting losing battle. They know that the treatment works. They know that always science will win over bureaucrats. They are still trying to protect their ego, but they are going to lose. There is no way they are going to win. What I'd like to do, I would like to make sure that America will be the first country where these medicines are approved, so that American people don't need to go to Japan to take the treatment for cancer. But if FDA would like to do it this way, it will be approved all over the world. And finally, the question will be what people in America would like to have, effective cancer treatment or obstructive agency, which is not allowing them to have cancer treatment. They are going to lose, and the longer it takes, it's worse for them. They should finally get the message that they should quit, because this litigation only helps us. Whatever they are trying to use to destroy us, it helps us tremendously. We increased our research potential. We are able to speed up the development of our clinical trials. We obtain great visibility all over the world. So whatever they were trying to use against us backfired, and it really helped us in great way.
You're getting a lot more people then from all over the country and all over the world coming for treatment now?
Oh, yes, they're coming, and you see, we have great awareness of the people all over the world. We have BBC TV, which is going to make a program about our plight. Last week, we were contacted by one of the major German TV, which would like to make a program. Everybody in Poland, which is a country of about 40 million, knows about us these days. I just came from the meeting with Prime Minister of the Republic of Poland yesterday, and they are very supportive. So it's just a matter of time. And if FDA, if this government will not finally wake up and see what's going on, they will look really ridiculous throughout the world. And everywhere in the world, they'll be available effective treatment for cancer using antineoplastins, but not in America.
This is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Brzezinski, and of course, Dean Mosier, who works with Dr. Brzezinski as clinical trials director. If people in our listening audience would want to contact your organization, perhaps they have a medical problem. Or do you ordinarily just take patients straight, or are they ordinarily referred by other physicians?
We have both ways. Obviously, we have a number of patients who are referred by the other physicians, but some patients are coming to us because they simply heard about us. So we have to evaluate if they qualify for admission to clinical trials, which means that we have to review medical records, we have to run some tests, perhaps we need to do some MRI or CT scan if necessary. It usually takes about a couple of days before we can decide if the patient can be admitted to clinical study. If they don't qualify, because some people are too sick to be admitted to clinical study, we can ask FDA for compassionate exception. And what is amazing is that whereas FDA lawyers are still trying to get rid of us, we are enjoying good working relationship with researchers at FDA. We have daily correspondence with them, and recently they usually approve requests for compassionate exception. So one way or another, we are able to accept most of the patients who are coming to us.
Okay, fine. Now, you say that probably 70 to 80% of inoperable brain cancers respond to a greater or lesser degree?
Well, it depends really what type of brain tumors we are talking about. We are treating 23 different types of brain tumors, and some of them have much lower response. But generally, I think it looks like we can help initially approximately 70 to 80% of patients. Of course, as we move along, some of these patients will not be able to survive because they came to us too late, they are too advanced, or they have some other existing problems which are too difficult to handle. But basically, at the beginning, most of these patients are showing response to the treatment.
Well, I think that's really, really amazing. How could people reach your clinic? Do you have a telephone number you'd like to put out?
Sure, yes. The number is 713-597-0111. Or the area code is going to be changed very soon, and the new area code will be 281, but the telephone number is the same, 597-0111.
All right, fine. And if you are out there in the listening audience and you didn't get that number, why, you can certainly call Barbara on the board. That's 713-597-0111. If you, for any reason, would want to contact Dr. Brzezinski, of course, you can always get in touch with us, and we have his number on file, and we'll make it available to you. Now, certainly, you know, for cancer, one of the great tragedies of that can befall anybody is to have a brain tumor, any tumor anywhere in the body. Certainly, a pancreatic tumor is, as I said earlier, so destructive, and certainly there's never been an effective treatment for it. Now, these peptides that you use, these amino acids, are they produced from the body? Do you actually produce these?
Well, they exist in our body because they form our defense against cancer, but we produce them synthetically. These are purely synthetic chemicals which we produce in our manufacturing plant. Of course, they are non-toxic, so we don't need to worry about adverse reactions while we take this treatment. The main issue is if we can have good results.
Now, basically, are they given orally or are they given intravenously? How are they administered?
Well, about two-thirds of our patients are receiving intravenous treatment, but about one-third is taking treatment orally in form of capsules. This is, of course, very easy treatment to take. If we are talking about intravenous treatment, then we usually attach a small pump, which is infusing the medicine into patient veins. It's automatic treatment. The patient can walk around while he is receiving infusions. And soon after they will improve, they can go back to work.
Now, how long a period do they have to take treatments? Is this a week, a month, 6 months? Is it recurrent treatment? Play out?
The treatment is administered every day. For instance, if somebody takes capsules, he takes capsules every day until the tumor is completely gone. And after that, we still would like to continue for 4 to 8 months to make sure that we eradicated every cancer cell the patient may have. So we may be talking about a year for average type of tumor, but sometimes the results are much faster. We have patients in whom tumor disappeared even after 2 months of treatment. So really, it depends on the type of tumor and also how advanced is the patient.
Well, now, do you do all this yourself? Do you have a medical staff there to help you with the management and treatment of the patients?
Well, it's impossible to do it on my own. I am employing about 130 people. Among them is 26 doctors. And among these doctors are 16 medical doctors. And we are still increasing our staff. So really, in order to be able to treat so many patients, to comply with FDA regulations, we need to employ quite a good number of people.
Well, I think that it's amazing what you're doing. I wish you well. I hope we can call on you again in the future. And I hope and pray that some way or other pressure can be put on the government to stop trying to keep you from saving human lives.
I have no doubt that with your help and American people, we are going to win.
God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us, Dean Mosier.
Thank you
and
very much.
Dr. Brzezinski. Bye-bye. And
thank you very much.
May the Lord be with you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.